Welcome to episode 42 of the Band of Gamers podcast, the Life, the Universe, and Everything edition. My name is Greylock3491, and this week I'm joined by DBQ Hams.
I appreciate the little Hitchhiker's Guide reference there. Nice job.
Thank you very much. And Zeus Adamus.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Yeah, 42. The answer to life, the universe, and everything. What a great book, audio book, and I wanted to go back and find one of those original Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy video games, but I didn't get time this week. We had issues with our server, went down over the weekend, and things were just crazy. But maybe for next week, because we all know 42. Even though it's the ultimate answer, it's actually not the right answer. With that said, we're going to move right into our first segment, what we've been playing this week. And I'm going to start. We're going to change things up. We're actually doing things in reverse order this week. And I'm going to start by going first and saying I had a great time playing co-op in The Division, doing mostly level 14 to 19 missions, as well as this week my friends and I mixed it up in Destiny. And we actually did the daily and the weekly, and I actually got some marks. I was very empty, so I think I'm up to 80. Can't really buy anything good, I don't think, right now, but there's some rocket launches with the guidance settings that I have my eyes on. So, and I also got from Xur the Don't Touch Me Year 2 version of the Don't Touch Me Gauntlets, which is great because every time a thrall hits you, you disappear. So that's good. That's great for the raid there. What raid? Crota Zen raid. So, gotta love that. So that's it. That's it. And I got more to talk about The Division later. But with that, I'm going to go ahead and pitch it over to Zeus Adamus. Hey, what have you been playing, Zeus?
Hey, so I haven't been playing a lot, but, you know, Grid 2 continues to come up on my playlist quite frequently for some reason. Even though it's, I definitely decided this week it is my least favorite of the two grids that I've played. I have the third one. I haven't gotten around to trying that out yet. But I played some Grid 2 this week. I played some with my wheel and pedals a couple of weeks ago, and decided to just try it with the controller this time, which definitely controls better. Not as immersive as the wheel and pedals, but I noticed a few, you know, more things about the game. It's an older game, but you know, I play older games, so. One of the things is I mentioned before that, you know, I'm not crazy about kind of the RPG elements that they try and put in it, or the way they try and make you feel like you're really in a career. I just kind of rather have, you know, just give me the list of tracks and give me a list of cars and let me go play whatever I want to play. So when you're in each of the phases of the career, you know, you only have like, you know, three or four tracks available at a time. And you're just given, like, a stack of cars that you can race on those three or four tracks. So it feels a little constrained and a little limited. On track, it's pretty neat. It can be very challenging. I'm in this European circuit now where a lot of the tracks, maybe all of the tracks, are in cities, and they're, like, road courses that they've set up temporary barriers for, and those are just really tough because you get a lot of those tracks where there's just nowhere to make a good pass. So that was pretty interesting. And then I also played some Need for Speed Shift on the PlayStation 3, which is one of those racing games. I guess I was really excited about it when it came out because I actually had it on pre-order at GameStop. And when I went and picked it up a few years ago, just never got around to spending a lot of time in it. So I did get some time in it. It's one of the better Need for Speed games, I think, that doesn't get any praise and has no notoriety. It's like, I think most people aren't even aware that it's a Need for Speed game, because it's a little less arcadey than some of the other games. But I played some of that as well, and then also played a couple games on my Nvidia Shield Pro. So, what about you guys? I know Gray, at least you're a big racing game fan, but. Have either of you guys ever played Shift?
I haven't at all. But it seems like of all the Need for Speeds, what drew you back to that one, Zeus?
It's kind of platform topical. Like I recently moved stuff around in the computer lab, and I moved the PlayStation 3 over to its own workstation, so it's hooked up to a 27-inch IPS monitor now. So it just kind of came up in my rotation that I wanted to play something on that platform, and with the timing of the evening or day or whatever, that I was finally getting a window to play on it. Shift was one of the easier things to get into because it doesn't have a huge amount of like startup and ramp up time, and it's not like you have to go create a character or anything. And I guess just because I play a ton of racing games, I think now that I'm streaming and game capturing that, I'm really realizing how much time I spend in racing games, and it's pretty significant, I think. And yeah, I'm sorry if how I went into that is confusing. So I didn't just pick Shift up. Shift is a PS3 game that I've had for a few years, but like I said, I just recently moved everything around, and also I don't know if you guys remember, but I guess at the tail end of last year, I also I'm not sure exactly when I did it, but sometime within the last 6 months, I also completely slicked my PlayStation 3 that I kept. When I moved, I had two. I had an original 20 gig unit SKU that I'd thrown a 320 gig drive in, and in the downsizing that I think always happens when you move, the original launch window SKU I went ahead and got rid of, and then I wiped the newer PS3 SKU. And just kind of started over. So Shift was one of those games that was available in my backlog.
Cool. Yeah, neat. Gray, how about you? Have you played Shift?
You know, I've been a big racing gamer since Night Driver on the Atari 2600, but the Need for Speed games, well, my son was always into those. I think he played every one. He's into Fast Five. He's actually just got out of the Marines, going to become a mechanic. He's going to school for mechanics. So, he was always the Need for Speed guy. I never really got into, I played a little bit with him, some of the real early titles like, Most Wanted. But I was more into the simulation side. Like, I was a big Le Mans guy on the Dreamcast. I could just, and of course we talked last week about Project Gotham Racing 3, and some of it, but never got into the Need for Speed myself.
Well, I think that's one of the things that unfortunately happens with the NFS series, and it's unfortunate that I think EA then keys off of that in deciding what stripe of Need for Speed game they're going to put out next. I think it has a connotation with a lot of people as being a franchise of arcadey racers, and especially when you think of images that like the Underground series invokes. Need for Speed in its roots, I think, was much closer to Sim in DNA than you might think. It's always skewed a little more towards being arcade. I would say it's been less of a Sim, but it's not. But every iteration hasn't been an extremely arcadey racer like the Underground series has been. And I love Most Wanted, and I love the Hot Pursuit flavors of Need for Speed, but it has frequently had much more of a sim-oriented variant that's been released, and Need for Speed Shift and Need for Speed Shift 2, which I also have and haven't played in a while. I was surprised. I didn't realize that Shift 2 carries the Unleashed moniker, which... Again, I don't know how well everybody knows their Need for Speed, but the last racing game that used that title was Need for Speed Porsche Unleashed, which I consider as a classic in the Need for Speed franchise. So I guess it's just, Need for Speed just has such a long history and a legacy as a racing game that it always kind of tickles me a bit when you think about Shift and Hot Pursuit and Most Wanted and use of the name Unleashed and, them... EA now kind of categorizing which type of Need for Speed game is going to come out next. So it's just a really awesome franchise, I guess, that I have a long history with.
I just want to raise my hand and say I made a mistake. It wasn't Most Wanted. It was Hot Pursuit. So thank you for reminding me of that, Zeus.
So Zeus, when was the last time Unleashed was used as part of the subheading? Yeah, that seems like it's been out of rotation for a while.
Yeah, the only time it was used was in Porsche Unleashed, which was a 1990. Man, it was either 88, it was either 98, 99, or 2000. It was somewhere between 98 and 2001. But it's one of the amazingly, it was one of the few Need for Speed games on PC that played all the way up through, I want to say, Vista. So it came out with like Windows 98 SE, and I was able to play it on all Windows versions up through Vista. So, but yeah, it's only ever been used with that Porsche Unleashed, and I haven't played Shift 2 to see what it does that would make them slap that label on it. I wonder if it is a lot of European open road tracks, like racing along the cliffside at Corsa. Which is a lot of Porsche Unleashed was a lot of Italian tracks, just kind of open road tracks. So I'm wondering to see if it's like that at all.
Huh.
So
yeah. So another question here. So, and I'm not nearly as big of a racing gamer as you and Gray, but so you've played, the most recent Forza. You've played, things on this generation in terms of racing games. How does it feel in terms of mechanics going back to a previous generation? I mean, do you notice that the change in generations or the extra power or memory results in a smoother gameplay experience, or is it just graphical flourish?
Man, that's a tough question and a difficult one, and I'm frightened to irritate the really big racing aficionados who might listen to our show, like Solo Racer X or some of the other guys from the site.
That's a good point. Yeah. So.
I think what you notice. I think what I definitely notice is the graphical additions, right? The extra memory, the power of the platform that you're playing on is what allows things to be rendered much more richly. And that's definitely what I noticed. The increased fidelity of the physics model, I think, is kind of, is unfortunately, maybe a secondary thing that you notice. And still, when you notice it, it feels like it's more stylistic choice that's specific to the game. I don't really recognize it as a matter of power or increased programmability as we've gone across the ages of consoles. So. Yeah, it's mostly the graphical oomph, and even I guess what I've also noticed is even when, the physics model gets better, that still may mean that a given racing game that's older might be tuned better. So what about you, DB? You've asked me a lot of racing questions, man. I want to hear what you've been playing for the last week.
Sure, no problem. Well, one of the things that I've been playing is Halo 5 with you, Zeus. So thanks for teaming up with me. Still kind of picking our way through the story missions. So picked off a couple other missions over, sometime late last week. So maybe we can try it again this week and keep kind of chipping away. So that was good. Thanks a lot. I picked up, I got it through Gamefly, right? So I rented Quantum Break. So I have been curious about this game, but never really that excited about it. And I know, I wish Prime was here, because I know he was interested in it. I shouldn't say it was, because I have only a few chapters in. But I'm really enjoying it for the story, but the gameplay is kind of toss away. And that works okay, because I am not... I'm trying to get through it and want to see the story, but in terms of third-person shooting, it's okay. There's some interesting time powers, but truthfully, the fact that the first, 20 minutes, I mean, it's almost, the first 20 minutes is probably all story stuff, and it does a great job of really hooking you in. The graphics look great, the facial motion captures is really good, the whole time manipulation piece, it really hooks me. I've even kind of enjoyed the cheesy cable TV stuff in terms of the live action pieces in between. Again, not great, but for like an end of the night kind of chill out experience and not super intense or competitive, it's been really good. So Have either of you guys tried this yet? So this is we're a big Xbox podcaster. You know, there's both of us. All of us have been Xbox players. Have either one of you guys picked this up or played a little bit? Zeus, have you tried it?
No, I sure haven't.
I haven't, but it's interesting to hear your what you're saying, DB, because I was surprised at the reviews. I thought this was going to be a smash hit, and the reviews have been kind of on the mediocre side and kind of reflecting what you're saying.
Maybe a week ago, there was a really interesting piece on Forbes in terms of the fact that the reviews are so diverse that it must mean this game is doing something interesting, right? Because there's reviews out there that have it in the nines, there's reviews that have it in the fours. You know, and I think that makes a really good point, that this game is trying to do something different. It's trying to tell a story in a different way. You know, and I think that's to be commended. Whether or not the gameplay aspect makes it a great video game is a different question, but the idea that it could be a good experience or an interesting narrative experience is worthwhile to me. You know, it's a first person, it's a you know, single player, story driven, narrative based game, only on one platform, I guess two technically because of PC. I'm sure it's going to see a discount, but at the same time, I know that it's probably not worth it for me to pick up at full price, but I really want to support what Remedy's trying to do because it feels like it's something different than just kind of a cut-and-paste third-person shooter type of thing. So, yeah, I mean, look for it. You know, right now on Amazon, it's only $48. So I'm sure it'll be seeing discounts. But it's worth experiencing. And whether or not it's going to be a gameplay shift or something that changes things, but I think it's worth experiencing. The other thing that I've been playing, Zeus, did you have a question on that or a comment in terms of Quantum? Have you looked at any of those reviews?
I've been tracking just kind of the trend on Metacritic, and I know it's up, you know, 1 point, but that's still a shift from what I saw it at a couple days ago. One of the questions I wanted to ask you is now, did you ever play Max Payne or any of the games in that franchise?
So I've played Max Payne and the original Alan Wake a little bit on PC. So I enjoyed Max Payne. You know, the bullet time aspect is really interesting. Truthfully, they could have easily done some type of bullet time thing here and actually had an in-game narrative reason to do it, right? If you can stop or slow down time rather than just make a cool angle, camera angle. But, yeah, I enjoyed Max Payne. I think that was neat. I liked the story aspects of it. Alan Wake, I never really got far enough in, but I thought it did a really good job of creating an environment, creating an atmosphere. And so I think both of those things, you know, make a difference. I think both of those things impacted here. Were you a big Max Payne fan, Zeus?
Dude, Max Payne is like one of those rare games. I mean, I play, you know, a few minutes of a lot of games, and Max Payne was one of those few rare games that I actually hooked into all the news and buzz in the news cycle pre-release. Played the demos, and then like bought the game on day one. So and instantly fell in love with that franchise. I still love it. Recently, was trying to get it to work on my PC again, and couldn't get it to run on a Windows 10 machine for some reason. But I guess the two questions I have are one, so I know that they don't necessarily have bullet time in it, but is there anything stylistically about the game that kind of jogs your memories in terms of nostalgia of Max Payne? And then a slightly unrelated question is, so we had Destiny and we had, what is the guy's name from Game of Thrones? The guy who plays
in the game in terms of character actors?
Yes, yeah. The guy who was the big voice actor in Destiny when it first launched, but then the patch came out and like removed his voice.
Oh yeah, Peter Dinklage. Yes. Yep, Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, so you know, we had that and that was a big story and big buzz, and it didn't really add a lot to the game. So my question, my unrelated question is, there's some star power on this, on Quantum Break. You know, you've got Sean Ashmore from the X-Men franchise, and I think he's crossed like both franchises, right? He was in the original three and has shown up in the later movies. So, and then of course Dominic Monaghan, who was Pippin, I guess, in the Lord of the Rings movies. Do either one of those guys add any effective, performance quality and immersion in the game?
So I think maybe the immersion there is that they're actors that you may recognize, they're faces that you may recognize, and so you can appreciate the graphics, you can appreciate the rendering of their face. I mean, overall, the game looks really pretty. I mean, it for a game that's optimized for Xbox One, it looks great. The character modeling, the motion capture, you know, is really spot on. And the fact, I think this is how it gets to your question, Zeus, is the fact that we know what these people look like in real life means that when you see them captured in a digital format, you can appreciate that because it looks really close, right? It's not like, it's not, you know, the polygons are rough or they're flat in certain edges where you know it wouldn't be flat. You know, they really get those textures down. And so the overall, the graphical polish of this game is spot on. It's wonderful. I think this is why it's an enjoyable narrative experience, because it's a neat world to be in. And whether or not it's a great game, but it's a really neat world to be in. So the one kind of, you know, and this is many of the reviews are talking about this in terms of the live action stuff is with another character. It's with a second character. It's with a side character that eventually there's two parallel tracks, right? There's the video game Jack Joyce, the protagonist there, and then there's another protagonist in the live action series. And it works, at least from what I've seen so far. You know, you kind of acknowledge what you're watching, and you know, it's not going to win any awards in terms of acting. But what I do wonder about is, like you said, Zeus, if they have that star power, why not use those same people in the live action stuff, right? And make it seamless. And so maybe it wasn't, because how do those choices affect the game, or they don't, or it takes away your agency, or maybe if you were seeing those characters back and forth in live action and in motion capture consistently, you'd start to notice the differences even more. And so keeping them only in one world or another helps kind of keep that suspension of disbelief. But you know, either way, it's I'm glad Remedy did it. You know, they took a chance on this kind of storytelling. It's certainly not as maybe ambitious as what they announced it years ago, but it's probably more of a manageable goal. And so it's been really fun. You know, it's been enjoyable. I hope to come back to it, but at the same time, it sat in my PlayStation, or in my Xbox, because I had a PlayStation controller in my hand for most of the weekend, because I was playing the Battleborn open beta. So Battleborn by Gearbox, the creators, by the same development team of Borderlands. Battleborn had a closed technical test back in December, which I was in on Xbox One. This coming week here, it opens up for an open beta on Xbox One and PC. You know, people have called it a hero shooter, but it's, I don't know if it's really that. I mean, it's different than Overwatch, right? Overwatch is Team Fortress. This feels much more in kind of the MOBA-esque fashion. So it works the story mode. World Voyager and I from the CAG forums played a couple story missions together. They play out like almost like Destiny Strikes, where there's a couple mini bosses, you're moving through a level and you get to a main boss, that there are lots of characters to choose from in terms of different classes and subclasses and melee and range. Really great art style, in terms of very cartoony, even the down to the Gearbox logo as the game loads up, it's got this kind of Saturday morning cartoon look to it. And it's been fun, right? After a very realistic-looking Quantum Break and playing a very realistic-looking New York in The Division, to have something that's kind of cartoony has been fun. The multiplayer stuff is a little MOBA-like in terms of, you've got 5-on-5, and you've got some creeps, you've got, you know, bots that you're trying to either escort to a spot or get to attack a base. Other people online I've heard talk about it similar to Monday Night Combat. Gray, as an old 360 player, did you get into Monday Night Combat? Do you remember kind of that type of gameplay?
You know, and I hate to disparage Battleborn, but that's all I could think about when I was watching the videos was, wow, this feels a lot like Monday Night Combat. Now, I'm sure there's 100 people out there who say, oh, you're totally wrong, it's nothing like that. But I just couldn't help but feel that when I was watching the videos. So, you know, do you think, DB, does it have depth? Because Monday Night Combat didn't have depth. I mean, it had all the right stuff to have depth, but it just didn't have it.
So I guess, yeah, that was my question to you, was going to be, so did you enjoy playing Monday Night Combat? The depth here, I think, is, there certainly is depth. So there's like three different layers of leveling. So you as a player have an overall level, which the higher your level goes, you unlock more of the 25 different characters, right? And the other nice thing about this is, unlike a free-to-play game, there's not DLC in terms of buying certain characters and kind of nickel and diming you that way. And then you have character levels, which carry over from game to game, and both the multiplayer or the single player stuff. And then in each battle, there's a level. So you start off at level 1, and this is kind of the Monday Night Combat, kind of the MOBA aspect, or even like Halo Warzone, where you gain levels as you go up, as you progress through the map and the mode. That then, there's a skill tree, and there's a skill tree that has, it's, they call it a helix, but basically you have, at each level you have a choice between two different powers, or two different abilities. And so you're building on that, and so you can spec your character different ways each match, depending on who you're teamed up with. So, you know, if you need to be more of a healer or more of a tank, or, you know, you want to have some type of elemental damage, or you want to, you know, you can... I think there's the depth there because of the fact that there's 25 characters. I think there's ways to pair those characters up. You know, I don't know that I've experienced that depth yet because it's still the beta, but even playing in some of the multiplayer matches, I've seen a pair of two people running around just wrecking stuff up with somebody healing that character as the other character is taking people down. And so there might be some depth there in terms of that. Are either of you guys interested in picking it? Great. So you're wondering about depth. It's an open beta this week. Are you going to download it to give it a try?
No. No. And it looks fun. I mean, the videos and the whole theming around it just seems great, but there are, you know, so many hundreds of games out there. It didn't make it to my must playlist.
So here's the one thing I'll say about it as a father, is that as somebody who really enjoyed Borderlands and loved the fact that Borderlands on, you know, the Handsome Jack collection has 4-player split screen, but as a father of a middle school and a elementary school child, there's so much, you know, head exploding for the sake of animation that happens in Borderlands, where this game, it has a T rating. And so even one of my sons, who's not a real big first-person shooter fan, the characterization of some of the different, of the players, the characters, the different models, has got him interested. And it does, since it does have split-screen co-op and it's only a T-rated game, it almost feels like it's something that I could sit down and play with my kids on a Saturday morning. And so for me, that's a valuable, that adds another component in terms of getting legs out of this game. So that's all I've been playing, which is talking more, but two new games, something for people to think about. as we're heading out there. But Gray, I'm going to kick it back to you, and let's head to the next section.
Yeah, we're going to take our first break here and go into this week's community news. First up for the community news is our car club news, and Solar Racer X has posted his new top five collisions or passes or catastrophes from the car club's Sunday night racing league. And my favorite this week, I don't know if you guys watched it yet or not, my favorite was, it was tough to choose between five and four. I mean, they're all good. I love them all, but I had to go with number four. Number four is my favorite. Now, if you all want to watch Solar Racer X Top 5, I made a link at casualadultgamers.com/car. And if we didn't have a server crash this weekend, I would be announcing something, another big deal with the car club. But that's going to have to wait the next week until we get all the bugs. First time our software vendor has had a bad upgrade. So we'll give them a pass, and we'll wait a few days for it to get resolved. So big news about the car club next week. But check out Solar Races X top five from the car club's weekly race, and they still have a few spots open. If you're just casual, laid back, you want to do some racing in Forza 6, check them out. The next thing is Band of Gamers, right? So as you know, last week we had the new look with the whole Division, you know, background and banner and all the people who contributed avatars to the list. Well, this week, you probably already noticed, we have new intro music, right? Now, the guys on the show, they haven't even heard it yet. You're hearing it before them. But the reason behind this intro music not being from the Division is, unlike Destiny, we could not find any free good music from the Division. So we went out and we got this artist who makes, I think, an awesome intro, and our license allows us to use it for the next 12 months. So I hope you enjoy it. If you are a musician or artist and you want to make an intro, an outro for our show, we'd love to have it from you. Just send it to us at podcast@bandagamers.net, and we'll give you full credit for your awesome work. As far as casual adult gamer community news, I want to congratulate DBQ Hams for being the member of the week. He had the most valuable, most read, most liked posts of the week over at Casual Adult Gamers. And to make it worse, I never did post the notice that he won, because I was dealing with a server crash for 4 hours. So congratulations, DBQ Hams, for winning the Casual Adult Gamers Member of the Week. And last thing I want to say is, if you have community news, you may not be part of the Gaming World Forum's suite of websites, but that's okay. If you listen to the show and you want us to share news about what you and your friends are doing or about what your gaming website is doing, send us an email at podcast@bandofgamers.net. Or if you even just want to say hi or want to shout back and tell us how you felt about something we talked about, send us an email at podcast@bandofgamers.net. And that's it for this week's community news. All right, guys, so we're going to jump into segment two, and I'm going to go ahead and kick it off again, even though I'm not the next one on the list on our show notes. But a couple quick things I had in the news that I want to, if you guys have something to say about these things, please raise your hands. But the first thing I talk about is kind of a bait and switch here. I saw on IGN right before I got to the site here to do the podcast that they said that there was 153 original Xbox backward compatible titles. And I was like, no way, original Xbox titles on the Xbox One? Well, it turned out that I read it wrong or was written poorly or one of the two. But no, the good news is there are now 153, I think it's 153, let me check my notes, 153 backwards compatible Xbox 360 games for the Xbox One. Still no news on the original Xbox games, which to me, I'm like, they already built the 360 emulator for the original Xbox games, so can't they just put that inside of an emulated 360? on the Xbox One. I don't know. The other thing, though, that really caught my eye was the VR reviews. If you look at IGN.com, and I'm just using them because they're the only people I had a chance to go visit tonight before the show, the Oculus got a 9.0, and the Vive got a 9.3. I did not watch the Oculus. Review video. I did watch the Revive video, and man, that thing looked pretty awesome. If you like whole room type of VR where you can move your coffee table out of the way and use your whole room to walk around in like a true VR, wow! And I was blown away by both these scores. I mean, the one thing that worries me though is the whole point of hey, you can see individual pixels. That in and of itself almost makes me want to wait to the next gen, right? Not that I can afford to buy the current gen, but I think that would be disheartening. But so I'm just throwing it out to the team. Anybody have thoughts on the VR scores? They seem really high for launch systems. DB?
So I think, you know, I've read other sites. CNET had some, you know, there's been some tech sites that have had stuff out on the both units. Polygon has had reviews out on both units. Giant Bomb has done almost day-long live streams with the launch of both units in terms of what they are. I think the reviews, I think it makes sense that they're high, right? I mean, it is a technical showpiece and a masterpiece that they work and work as well as they do. Whether or not, again, reviewing the unit is different than reviewing the games that are able to be played on that unit. And so I think the hard part there is whether or not people are going to, you know, one, can get their Oculus, as the news stories have shown them, you know, delays in shipping, and, you know, or get a chance to experience an $800 machine where you need a giant space to set it up with the Vive. In, you know, even now that there's going to be some Vive demos out in a few GameStops and Microsoft stores, I think it makes sense that the hardware could be reviewed well. I think it's going to be a question of how the games review. Zeus, what are your thoughts? You've been kind of skeptical on VR as we've been talking about this month to month.
Yeah, I think the thing is, you know, it's interesting, you know, that the scores are up there. There's not really a yardstick to measure it against unless you say that it's every failed VR product that's come to market before these two. I guess in comparison to those, that would definitely make these things, you know, 9.0 and above units. I don't really know how important the scores are other than being relevant to each other. And unfortunately, I'm that kind of guy, right? If I see that the Vive has a higher review score on a site that I trust, and I'm doing my final down select before going to buy, I probably go with the Vive, unless there's some very stark differences in terms of compatibility. You know, if the Vive could run off of an NVIDIA GTX 960M, and the Oculus requires a 970, then that might drive my, you know, decision one way or another, you know, outside of and beyond the score. I think the big thing for me for these is, it's not necessarily relevant to the news, but I think I have figured out the play I'm going to make to step up to compatibility with a VR headset, because I think I mentioned I ran the utility on all my machines. None of them are VR ready. But I think what I'm going to target this fall is one of these small, ultra-portable laptops that uses an external enclosure so that you can, you know, you can get the laptop, but then you can add, you know, whatever video card you want in this breakout box. So Alienware has one, and Razer has one. Right now I'm leaning towards the Alienware, but I think that's how I get around the issue of the minimum GPU requirement by just getting an external enclosure where I can throw in there, you know, whatever I want and upgrade it whenever I want.
Yeah, that's definitely a good option. DB, did you want to talk a little bit about the in-store Vive demos while we're on this topic before we pitch it over to Zeus for his Doom story?
No, I think, I mean, that struck me as an interesting piece that, you know, part of the whole sales pitch of VR is kind of have to, you know, experience it to believe it. And so having those demos in stores, but really, you know, looking back through the news story, I think this is where things need to go in terms of getting people the chance to experience it and to see if they want to plunk down that investment. But you know, at this stage, they're still only talking about a handful of stores, and so it'll be interesting to see how stores stock this as inventory, and if they do, because whether or not at that price point, if it's going to move out, you know, how do they set up floor space to demonstrate that? So, yeah, and again, just be interesting to see how this market kind of evolves. So, I'm going to toss it over to you, Zeus. You've got one new story, which actually segues us nicely. So, into our topic of the week.
Yeah, so it's a very quick news story, but, you know, the Doom beta, the closed beta, was held, I think, a couple weekends ago. And coming up this weekend, there will be the open beta. So, you know, that should be interesting. I don't know. I don't remember if Doom 3 had a beta. But, you know, the Doom series is a venerable series. Arguably, they could have certainly gone without a beta, because the Doom name and franchise just carries so much cred. So it's very interesting that that a studio like id decided to run this with a beta. And then I think that beta is going to be, it's going to be on both console platforms, I think. I don't know if there's a PC beta or not, but the beta is going to run the 15th through the 17th. There's two maps, two modes. It has one demon that's going to be playable for player characters. And then the game comes out the 13th of May, so pretty much 1 month after anybody participates in the beta, which is, I think, feels like just right in terms of a timeline. But you know, the big thing about this is it's a natural lead-in to the question we wanted to kind of ask ourselves and kick around this week, which is, you know, are betas a good practice or a bad practice? You know, is it good, what does it say about betas when they come out, you know, way early before the game releases? There's this new trend of multiple betas where there's a closed beta and then an open beta for everyone. It's not really clear to me which of those two things is the server stress test. There's also the interesting thing that, a lot of times, I don't know that there's a direct correlation between multiplayer games or online games that do a beta and how well they do or do not perform in terms of load response when the game actually releases. So there's a lot of things out there about betas. DB, I'm going to kick to you first because I feel like you are definitely an avid player of betas. And definitely get in and check out games that have some playability before launch. Is that accurate? And can you describe or define like why that is a big thing for you?
So I think, you know, I guess I'll say maybe it's because I'm super cheap, right? And as this was a topic, as Gray mentioned, that I was posting on the CAG site this week, you know, one of the commenters talked about it was a good way to get in and try stuff out on the cheap. Even our Osiris Prime talked about it being a way he likes to get into a lot of different betas because it gives him kind of multiple play experiences. And I think that's probably part of why I enjoy a beta. I think I enjoy a beta in part because of that's something new. It's, you know, but it's also, it's something that's maybe not quite finished, or it's trying something, right? A stress test on a beta is really about, let's all jump into a map or into the server and see, let's make sure what we're trying to do works, versus help us tune and tweak, and does this actually, you know, that was, as I was playing Battleborn this weekend with World Voyager, we ended up talking about, you know, how they communicate some of the, you know, healing abilities or the skill tree, or, you know, what if you could do this, you know, and so I think there's an unfinished piece to the betas. There's an unfinished piece to the betas that seems really, has something that's inviting for me. So I think the one thing that there's a problem with that, though, or at least the potential problem, right, is if the unfinished aspect is something that's inviting to me, I think the flip side of that is it also becomes dangerous for whether it's betas or early access games on Steam that have been in early access for over a year now and, you know, kind of lose their marketing steam. You know, how in some ways betas have become the new demos, really. So I'm going to kick it over to you, Gray, and what have you done for betas?
You know, I have not been a big beta player of late just because of time constraints. I think it was Eve. No, I think it was Elite Dangerous on a 360 that I had downloaded and then had, fired up, and it was taking so long to load. And by the time I came back in the room, my 1 hour or whatever my time limit was over, you know. So I think betas are great. And I think, you know, all the people who post over at Casual Adult Gamers, don't misunderstand me. I think they're awesome. And I even cited Destiny having such a rock-solid launch versus Halo Master Chief because it didn't have a beta, you know? And I think that would have gone a long way to solving those problems ahead of time. But again, on the flip side, I do see where a lot of people play a beta. I mean, there's a lot of people who Gamefly games just to play them for a couple days and send them back. That's the only experience they need. And I think when you have a long beta, people can get everything they want out of the game in a couple of days and then never have to play it again. So there is a problem on the, you know, I don't know, revenue side with having a beta, depending on what type of product it is. What do you think, Zeus? What's your take on this? And I said that right as Zeus took a step out of the room. So DB.
Sorry, I'm still here. I was in the middle of typing something to you guys. So I guess one of the things that I'm curious about is, on mobile games, it's highly common for every app or game to have some level of immediate access for free, and then to allow you to buy in and unlock the rest of the game. So it's not unusual for you to, you know, download a game, which sometimes includes the full payload, sometimes it only includes part of it, like the first level or two, and then for you to say, oh yeah, I do really like this, and to go ahead and pay the full price and unlock the rest. Does it not seem logical to you guys that maybe next console generation, especially with everything going digital, maybe that's just the way things should be? And then you could move to get rid of the beta? Now I'm a software guy, so I like the thought of a beta. It allows you to get, you know, customer feedback, and, look, the more diverse... The wider the diversity of the testers that you have testing your software, the more it's an increased likelihood that you're going to surface a defect that maybe your own test team wouldn't reveal, or somebody's just going to do something to break a game that none of you ever dreamed of, and so therefore there was never a test case for it. So I get that, the big problem I have is, and I imagine betas have to be the same. I always worry about demos. If a game crosses, you know, two E3s in its development cycle, right, and the marketing guys decide that they want demos for both, right? You know, prepping a demo is not part of your primary development path, right? So you're gonna have to branch the code, you're gonna have to stub some code out, you're gonna have to put some containers and erect some barriers around, you know, parts of the code that you don't want people to traverse. And that takes development time. And then that demo package has to be groomed. And like I said, I imagine betas have to kind of take away some development time too at the tail end of your dev cycle. So at any rate, you know, again, my primary question is, do you think we should just move to a model where there are not betas? It's just you buy the first level or two of a game, and that is your beta, and then you buy it if you want to play the rest or you don't.
You know, I see problems with that from a storytelling aspect where the first chapter may not be, you know, it may be set in the foundation, and it may not be actually representative of the entire game. Just like with a book, I never judge a book by the first chapter, because a lot of times they're setting, especially in a new series, they're setting the ground floor for the rest of the book. So I think that becomes tough. And you know, my kind of question is, if the game is not a multiplayer game, like a massive multiplayer game, like a Destiny or a Call of Duty or a Battlefield, do we really need a beta? I mean, or even a demo disc? Because with all the media, YouTube, Twitch, and all of the gaming websites and podcasts, and all of these newsies being able to go out and try the game, before you used to get a game disc to try the game in your PC Gamer subscription or your Xbox One, Xbox Magazine subscription, because, you know, the article had no moving pictures and there was no major TV show on TV that was showing you this type of content. There was no YouTube and there was no really fast internet. So in this day and age, do we need a demo or a beta of anything that is not going to be, you know, not going to be a multiplayer game, focused game?
Well, before DB jumps in and answers that, because I believe he has an answer, I'm putting money that he has an answer. I want to pile on with that and also ask, and it just escaped me for some reason.
Okay, I'll jump in and you can.
Yeah, go ahead.
You can think about it. Okay, did you remember now, Zeus?
I think we're both envisioning those stacks of PC Gamer demo discs that we have lying somewhere in a cardboard box.
There you go, right? You took it out of your plastic bag, it came with the disc, or even, yeah, back, yep.
You know. I did remember what it is. So the concurrent question I'd like you to take on, DB, we'll call it for bonus points, is one of my questions is in this console generation especially, because I feel like it has, have demos just gone away? Like, I remember on the 360 just going into the marketplace and just seeing, well, there used to be a specific blade for demos, like in the 360 UI, I want to say. And I just feel like every month there was, like, you know, I don't know, 3 to 6 demos of games that were going to come out the next month. And, like, everybody on your friends list would play the demo and comment on whether or not it was encouraging them to buy the game. So I guess one of my questions for you too, DB, is in this vein of should we have betas, should we not have betas, does it feel like this increased availability of betas has encroached upon the availability of demos?
Oh, way to set me up, guys. Nice. So I think that, one, I don't want to sound negative on betas, because I think, to your point, Zeus, betas are and can be really important and effective in terms of game balancing and server load, and if it really is a test, then that's great. You know, I think that is really good. I think for me, I enjoy betas, but they also have ended up serving that role of the demo. This, you know, maybe this year, I don't even know if I've seen any demos on the store. You know, I think that there were a few that were out there. Forza Horizon 2 had a demo. You know, so there's a few demos that are out there, but not nearly as much as last generation. And even last generation, on the PlayStation 3, there was, you know, with PlayStation Plus, you had like a 60-minute trial for some games. You know, going back to Zeus, your comment about, you know, just, you know, a part of the game being able to play for free. Yeah, so, but I also wonder, as somebody who has sitting here, I have a spindle that has plenty of demos and demo discs on it, just like I'm sure you guys have a stack or box somewhere of demo CDs. You know, I think that what I wonder is if companies have looked at those message boards, have looked at those forums, and realized that, you know, putting it out there as a demo means that this is the game that they want to put out there, and that people are making those choices and having those conversations like you were talking about, Zeus, and either shying away or you know, diving in, and it's making, people are making up their decision before the game is actually released. Where in a beta, you know, maybe you'll try Battleborn, maybe you'll try the Doom beta, and you know, and enjoy it, or maybe you won't enjoy it, but you're also still, there's a part of you that's thinking, oh, well, it's just the beta, maybe the full game's going to be better, so I'm still going to wait and see, right? You haven't quite made up your mind. You know, this month, Gears of War 4 beta, the multiplayer comes out, you know, so that maybe you play the multiplayer beta in Gears and you don't have a great time, but you still enjoyed the gameplay, and because there's a single player aspect, you're not going to, you know, be turned off for the game completely. So, yeah, I think that there's a place for them still. I just wonder how we use them, and if it, you know, how that builds community or doesn't. You know, I'd certainly, in terms of Reddit, I'm sure they're glad for betas. So it keeps them talking, and keeping us talking is something that I certainly can do plenty of. But I know that we're running out of time, Gray. So, Zeus, do you have any final comments before we kick it back over to Gray?
Nope, not really. If I can pull my thoughts together, I'll jump in on the end.
Any final thoughts, DB, on the subject?
No, I mean, you know, truthfully, if people out there listening have thoughts, you know, there's a lot of betas going on over this time between now and as we head into E3, jump on over to the Casual Adult Gamers site, start up a conversation about the game that you tried, or maybe an early access, you know, and there's a good community out there that would be really interested in talking about it with you.
Yeah, and DB makes some great points. I mean, throw into the mix the whole idea of play balancing. I know Blizzard does that a lot with games like RTS games like StarCraft and whatnot. And then you have, across the whole evolution of the professional playtester and how people can become playtesters remotely now with the internet. So a lot there. But I'm looking at the time, and both DB and I have a hard stop tonight, and I'm sure Zeus does too. So we're going to go ahead and roll into our close here and start that by thanking you for listening. Really appreciate you taking the time each week. We'd love to hear from you. Even if it's just to share your own opinion or thoughts on what we're talking about, you know, podcast at bandofgamers.net, and we'll even read your email online on the show. And I think that's it, guys. I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up because I'm actually falling asleep. So my name is Greylock3491, and on behalf of TBQ Hams and Zeus Adamus, I want to thank everybody for listening again. And until next time we talk, peace.